listening to the Open Wheel Spectacular Podcast. Here is your host, TJ Buffenbarger.
Hello, world. On this edition of the Open Wheel Spectacular, we're going to break down the upcoming Chili Bowl Nationals and look at some of the big news topics from the past week. Joining me in the co-host seat again, Derek Bean. Derek, how was the holiday break for you?
It was really good. Michigan's moving on to the national championship tomorrow as we record this, so it was a good break for me.
Sorry, no, I can't get on board with that.
Okay.
I'm from the green side. As I'm wearing my Michigan State shirt here, getting ready for basketball later tonight. We're recording this on Sunday. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not. I know some people are like, oh, tides rise, ship, cheer for the Big Ten. I just can't do it, Derek. I can't.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you heard Tom Izzo, but he said that, what was his exact quote? Something along the lines of, he's not sure if he can cheer for Michigan, but if they win, the Big Ten will be winning when Washington joins next year.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's, that's kind of where I stand, I guess, too, on that. Right. So, and I'm 100% healthier than the last time we did this show, as I decided to get a sinus infection like the day before we recorded this. And then I've been like suffering through that through the whole winter, man. It's been brutal. So now that we're all healthy, the holidays are behind us. There's a lot of things to discuss. So let's get started, Derek.
Okay.
The latest dirt.
Legendary Hall of Fame inductee Rick Ferkel passed away on January 1st at age 84. Of course, all of our condolences go out to his family and friends, but Rick was so influential on from being a driver, mechanic, official. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable, you know, the impact he had on everyone, Derek, and just a sad way to start the year.
It really was. I really only knew Ferkel personally as the crew chief guy, but C-Bell, PPM, my biggest memory was Caleb Griffith going third to first at Butler, and Rick Ferkel was on the wrenches for that race, actually, for the All-Star race.
So. Yeah, in fact, you know, Caleb and I actually talked about that after this. You know, we think it might have been. We were trying to figure out if that was Rick's last win or not on the wrenches. And, you know, it was interesting. It was so interesting to see him during my years when I'd cover the Come Out series being kind of like the guiding figure, because that series was so young at the time, right? Like the drivers were all so young, and it was interesting to see him like be the guiding force in that and be like the mentor. And you think about the drivers that came out of that series. But then I also got to see Rick drive towards the tail end of his career. I mean, he was, you know, by the time I was of age to start remembering things, he was towards the end of his driving career. What was fun, I had mentioned this in a column, Derek, that Mike Campbell, I went by his photo stand after he had taken over a 360 team he was wrenching for. I actually started driving a little bit. And Mike was busy, and I couldn't figure out why. I asked him. He's like, every driver in the pit area wants a photo of them side by side with Rick.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I don't blame him.
No, not at all. It's so cool. That's just the respect he commanded. And it's Rick and Kathy. It's just hard to meet two nicer people. I mean, they were great to deal with. And Rick moved up here to Michigan because his son Ricky was teaching up here the past few years. In fact, the last time I think I ran into Rick was at a sod race at Hartford a few years ago. It was actually the last time I saw him. But sad way to start the year. Of course, our condolences go out to his family and friends.
Absolutely. Lincoln Speedway is looking at replacing their flagman with an electronic board. Perth Motorplex has already done this in Australia. What are your thoughts on that, TJ?
I'm kind of indifferent to it. I'm just like, whatever's going to be the most effective solution. And I don't even know if the effective solution might necessarily be a fit-all-fit solution. Like some tracks, this electronic board might be the best solution, but it may not be for every facility. It'll be interesting to see how it works if they go that direction at Lincoln. I've watched a lot of racing at Perth. I've discussed with you, Derek, that I'm kind of a, I've been a morning guy these days, and I love Perth because it comes on right at breakfast. You can watch it right through the morning. And so I watch a lot of races at Perth, and everything seems to go flawlessly. It's a little weird when the race ends. There's no checkered flag waving and stuff. That takes a little getting used to, but I mean, it seems functional. It takes a couple, 1 to 2 people out of the line of fire, so to speak. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, do we lose, Derek? What do you think? Do we lose any pageantry or some tradition with this?
I think that's the biggest thing is the tradition, and I think the checkered flag is obviously a really, really cool thing. When they're, especially double checkered flags, has always been really cool to me. And the kids up in the stands flagging, I know there are a lot of people talking about that. And so I think the tradition is going to be hard to get used to, but I know it's not as big of a deal, but they used to use the chalkboard at the track. You remember to line up cars? I always thought that was a little cool when I was young. They were always getting the chalkboard out and trying to get people.
Don't remind me of this. Yeah,
we don't use a chalkboard anymore. We just forgot about it. Right?
I am okay. You know, I will take the flagman over the chalkboard over the one-way radios any day. I mean, I can remember sitting there. I used to have the evil job of counting laps before a fuel stop at certain races in Michigan. I never want that job again. And seeing that chalkboard come out just still sends shivers down my spine. But, yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things that I think, you know, it's a case-by-case basis, really. I mean, you know, I don't see. But I can see, you know, it's hard to, you know, we're trying to get younger generations into the sport, right? And are they going to be inspired by the electronic board sitting out there on the front stretch? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. So, the Great Lakes Super Sprint schedule was released last week. It's a pretty ambitious schedule, Derek. 4 races scheduled across 4 states and into Canada. Derek, it seems like Barry Marlowe and his crew have really hit on something here and starting to make some momentum with this series.
Yeah, the diversity in the schedule is, I mean, awesome. You look at it, you have the mainstays from the Ohio NRA days. You have the mainstays from the Michigan days. But then you add some new tracks, and it just makes it really interesting for fans. It makes it interesting for the teams that are running it, and then just 360 racing in the region in general. It's just, I think, pretty exciting.
I'm really interested to see how it's going to break out, because they're still going to do the North and South regions, and it sounds like some of these races are going to be maybe tour points only. So, like, I've heard rumors that the Tennessee races may be tour points only, so they may not be a Michigan region or Ohio region points, just the points for everyone chasing the entire thing. Mm-hmm. That could be interesting. I mean, I don't know how, you know, seeing Canada come back on the schedule for 4 races was a surprise to me, but a welcome surprise, because those were, especially at the Northern Summer Sprint Car Nationals in September, 25th edition coming up. I think it's important to be a part of that show, because we were always, when it was sod in the area or whatever, we're a big part of that event. And I know it's a haul over there, and I know it's a pain for race teams to go over the border, but I feel that's an important thing to be on the schedule, at least to me.
I really, and of course, wing racing in Indiana, everyone always gets super excited about that. So 1 or 2 nights at Gas City, and then down to Lawrenceburg. That's really interesting to me. See what, first off, what kind of car count they get. And I mean, wing sprints on that track are always exciting.
Oh, yeah. Gas City's so much fun. I mean, with the 360s, I've done a couple of shows there with them, and it's a riot. And actually, the August show kind of fixed a problem I had in my racing schedule of in lines of getting out to Knoxville a little earlier and stuff. And I'm like, okay, that could possibly work, because I didn't want to – had some travel logistical things that had to work out, and that Gas City race actually fits in perfect. So it fixed the problem for me personally, so I really enjoyed that. Lawrenceburg was a huge surprise when that came out, when the Lawrenceburg schedule came out. I mean, what a get for them to get into that facility.
Exactly.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see guys tackle the high banks there, man. That place is wicked. It's like nothing else they have around here.
Yep, and the obviously top of the line facilities and just fast track. It's going to be it's something I would circle on my calendar to want to get to for sure.
The other things I really like on the schedule are all the I-96 crystal pairings. Those tracks are only about 45 minutes apart. So, I mean, that's a really neat pairing. And that used to be, growing up, a pairing I used to do quite a bit, you know, 1 or 2 times a year, but to have 3 of those paired up in the schedule kind of makes sense to me.
Yep, they obviously, we got Limeland and Waynesfield are kind of the main tracks for the Ohio region, and so yeah, it's going to work out, I think, pretty well for both North and South. Mm. High Limit Sprint Car Series is now up to 16 committed teams. Are you surprised the number has gotten so high? And how many of those teams are still on the tour when the series gets to California at the end of the summer?
Well, that is, it's way higher than I thought it was going to be. And obviously, there are teams that want a shot at these five charters. They're really feeling like this is something they want to be a part of. As really, I think a mix of the charters and the working less for the same amount of money thing is really seeming to resonate with these race teams and giving people a shot. How many of the 16 make it to California? 13. I'd say it'd be a fair number. I don't think all 16 are going to make it there. I just don't. I think at some point, reality is going to sit in if they feel like they don't have a shot at those 10 charters, at that point, and if things aren't going well, I mean, there's plenty of races to have in other places and not go out west.
Right.
Maybe they drop off. So, I mean, we'll have to see. My number, though, is 13 to 14. What do you think, Derek?
Yeah, well, they said there's a possible of maybe even 2 to 4 more teams joining, which would be insane. But, yeah, I agree with you. There 3 to 6 guys will probably drop off by the end, depending on how many start. I mean, one thing you got to factor in, too, is usually someone loses a ride along the way. And is it the driver who wants to follow, or is it the team that wants to follow? And then you have, again, a couple guys that are already, people are questioning whether they'll make it the whole way or not. So I think I agree with you. If the number gets up to 18, it could be, 5, 6 guys who fall off. If the number's 16, maybe 3 or 4 fall off.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. So the 2024 Fast on Dirt schedule came out, and when it did, Aaron Fry made the comparison of the schedule having the shades of Burt Emick's All-Stars. Derek, do you think that comparison's fair?
I think it's fair. You got Ohio Speed Week, which kind of anchors the whole deal, and then you have a lot of races within Ohio, and then you go to places like Kentucky, Pennsylvania, you go to Indiana for a weekend. So I think it is. It's pretty concise to where they're going. That's pretty good travel-wise, I feel like. So I think you really hit on something this year.
Yeah, I think it has the potential to fill that void. It's just going to take time. I don't think it's going to be an instant fix for this problem that's been created with the All-Stars going away. I think it's a nice way to fill the gap. And Aaron's very passionate. And I think that's going to be one of the things that drives the series to be in position to do that. And the schedule does have some shades of that. Not obviously a number of races necessarily, but where they're going. And yeah, I think it could. I just, like I said, I don't think the car quality I think it's just going to take time. Yeah, I don't think it's going to, out of year one, Ohio Speed Week will probably look okay, but the rest of it, it's probably going to take a year or two to really build that thing up to where it has that same kind of, energy that the All-Stars have. Because I've been to races where Fast has been, I had All-Star shows, and it wasn't quite the same vibe. But now with the All-Stars out of the way, I'm kind of curious to see what the vibe's going to be at those Fast shows.
At the end of the day, it's all about how do you convince drivers to commit to the series. Is it increased points bond, increased purse, whatever, but you need drivers, especially as you venture out further and further to places that don't typically run 410 sprints. So
yeah, absolutely.
So Joe Liguori finally got the monkey off his back, winning the Rumble in the Expo. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it was the best feel-good story over the Christmas holiday, really. I mean, Joe and his team, that's why I wanted to throw this on the show this week, is they've tried so hard to win one of those Rumble races. It's kind of hard to picture. I mean, Derek, for people that don't know, there are people that pretty much center their whole season around this Rumble deal.
Right. Yeah, Joe Liguori, they joked around at the track that he actually just got some koozies made that said zero-time Rumble champion, and then he knocks that off and wins one the same year, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Veteran driver that's been coming to the Rumble for a very long time, and to see someone succeed like that was awesome. It's always nice to have that kind of a feel-good story to wrap up the year. And that, for wrapping up things, we'll finish up the latest dirt segment. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it's time to discuss Chili Bowl. It's all about Tulsa this week, and we're going to break it down after this break. Of course, we want to thank our sponsors, All-Star Performance Max and Chassis and Dirt Track Nation. Thank you for your support of the Open Wheel Spectacular Podcast and TJSlideways.com. And Derek, it's Chili Bowl week. The Tulsa Expo Raceway practice actually taking place as we're recording this right now. And we got a busy week of racing to watch.
I am super ready for it, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy week. So let's start it out with just one of the first questions. Do you think this year's Chili Bowl champion, we're going to see a first-time winner, or we're going to see one of the former winners add another driller to the trophy case?
Well, the fact that a lot of the former winners, Bell, Larson, Rico, are not running, I think that opens it up to the field. But I would still say Thorson and CV are the favorites. However, I'm going to say that a first-time winner wins, and I'm going to specifically say that Justin Grant gets the monkey off his back and wins one this year.
Wow, you're going that specific and actually picking like an outright winner on Sunday. That's
I'm ready to roll the dice. I'm going for it.
Wow, yeah. You know, here I am, you know, qualifying my statements. You know, I was looking over the entry list the past week or so. I've kind of, as they were adding entries and adjusting, you know, picks and whatever else, I can't get higher to about seven people I would pick to win the Chili Bowl. And I'm going to go with you. I think we're going to see a first-time winner, and I think it's going to be Buddy Kofoid. And I that's my pick early in the week. You know, it was really tough because I going against Logan Seavey and Kevin Swindell, as important as this race is to that group, I mean, they put so much effort into it. I think Kofoid's hungry. I think he wants this thing really bad, and it's been so close to winning it. I think this is going to be Kofoid's year.
And going with back on talking about Seavey, I mean, he obviously had one of his best years to date also. So he is hot right now. That team loves the Expo, and I agree with you that he's probably the favorite, but I'm going to take the field with you.
Yeah, I think, you know, and like I said, I was kind of breaking it down. I came up with seven names. I'll be honest, these are the seven names I got it narrowed down to. It was Justin Grant, Logan Seavey, Tyler Courtney, David Gravel, that might surprise some people, Cannon McIntosh, Buddy Kofoid, and Tanner Thorson. That's where I ended. I mean, and granted, anyone really, I guess, has a shot at it, right? You have 370 entries, and so many crazy things can happen at the Expo. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I can't really get past, you know, unless somebody does something remarkable, that group right there.
Yeah. I mean, Shane Golubic has had quite a bit of success at Tulsa, so could be in the mix. But I agree with you. There's not a lot of guys outside of that. But you never know with a guy wins a prelim night or gets second to prelim night and draws a good starting spot on Saturday, they could be a factor.
Absolutely, and it takes so much luck, but you have to put it all together too. I mean, I think there's some luck involved getting through the prelim night, at least through the heat race especially. I mean, yep. Where you get seated in that heat race. Once you're past that, I mean, really it's a matter of, you know, performance. And, you know, the team I actually feel the best about, like of all these super teams and everybody else in the building, is Abacus. Mm-hmm. Abacus Racing is the one that I'm just like, yep, they're the ones. Because you look at it, you look at all the other teams, there's a variety of young people that might be in development deals with that race team or whatever else. Or they're cultivating talent, or there's various other people on the team. You look at Abacus Racing, the only thing they're looking to develop are drillers in their trophy case.
Right.
Because they've got Tyler Courtney, David Gravel, and Michael Pickens, who I think is actually a dark horse in this thing. I mean, I think this might be one of the best opportunities Pickens has had at the Chili Bowl.
Well, that's when you talk about, like, I mean, we talk about these super teams that have, like, 3, 5, 10 drivers or whatever. And then, I mean, even someone like RMS, they only have Spencer Baston and Justin Grant, but both of those guys could end up on the podium of their prelim night and have a really good chance on Saturday. So it's only a two-car team, but if you're giving me those two cars, that's a pretty good outlook for Saturday.
So when we talk Chili Bowl, we always look at the monstrous Keith Coons stable of cars, right? The dozen or so cars they always take to the Chili Bowl. I just trying to remember what they're up to now. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. It's like 13 cars on the entry list, roughly. How many of those do you think end up in the A-Main on Saturday?
I would think that they can get 3 to 4. I like Buddy. I like Cannon McIntosh. Axum has a shot to make the feature. I mean, any of the other guys could possibly... Tim's obviously ran a lot of midget this year. I wouldn't think he's going to be in the feature, but he could sneak in. You know, Avitasen, Cruz, Carrick, those, I mean, they could make it into the feature. I don't necessarily expect them to win, but I think it's going to be somewhere around 3 to 4.
You're not picking Jade. That's interesting. Is it the aggressiveness that you think?
Yeah, I don't think she's going to move someone to necessarily win a race.
Oh, I do. I 100% disagree with you there. I think, actually, all right, so here, I picked it. I think it's going to be Kofoid, McIntosh, and Jade. And I think they're going to be the three to actually put it in the main on Saturday. Flat out.
I guess we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, I guess we're close on the number, but I'm thinking those are the three, man. I have the other ones are really young guys that have the potential to do it, but that can go both either way. I mean, with that. I mean, so those younger guys, it's like walking a tightrope. They could do really, really well at the Chili Bowl, or you could be watching, early on Saturday, watching that guy run. So Chili Bowl Rookie of the Year. I always like Rookie of the Year awards, especially at big races, because you only have one shot to win it, right? So kind of looking, is there anyone on the rookie field that stood out to you?
I thought this was kind of a little bit of a, I don't want to say this in a bad way, but a weak rookie class. But Joey Amantia, I think, is someone who could potentially win the Rookie of the Year. Teammates, Ricky Lewis and Trey Osborne, both, I think, have a shot. But if I had to pick one, it's going to be Joey Amantia.
I would actually pick the Osborne kid. I mean, and here's why. Is it seems like he sneaks up on people, right? Like, he all of a sudden comes out of nowhere, starts running really well. I think he's got capable equipment, it looks like. It'll be interesting who's spinning the wrenches on that deal to see if they can make it go. But, I mean, I think he might have the best shot out of this group to be Rookie of the Year. I kind of looked through the list about Friday. I would also probably throw, if he can get rolling, Cale Coons in there a little bit. Okay. I mean, he's got some excellent equipment. He's got his dad to lean on, first of all, for advice. And he's a heck of a wheelman himself, and he has plenty of experience in the D2 division over the past year. So, I mean, that's a really interesting combination. Those two were kind of the ones that stood out to me, at least. I mean, of course, we could look complete idiots here a week from now, and some kid we've never heard of could just light the expo on fire, and then we're going to look like complete morons, which is entirely possible to me. I mean, but it's... But I'll go with Osborne on this. I think he's probably going to get it done.
I know it's totally different, but Trey Osborne runs the Rumble every year, and that is one of the hardest places to pass people. You have to move people. You have to be aggressive, and he runs well there every year. So I don't know if that will help him at all at the Expo in Tulsa, but I think that it's not going to hurt him.
Not only because he run well there and move people, but he does it in a Kenyan midget with a Yamaha engine. So, I mean, let's be real here. He's maybe at a little bit of a disadvantage there, too. Oh, yeah. And he still runs well. So, I mean, that's a good telling sign for him. So, kind of keep an eye on that. So, if you had to pick one of the super teams, Derek, who do you think has the best shot at winning?
I mean, none of them stand out as super great to me this year. So if you're going to make me choose, I'd probably go with KKM only because they have so many options to win it. If it's going to be someone who's a first-time winner, they have guys who could potentially win it. But so I would probably have to go with them if I was picking, but mainly just because I don't know if the other teams are that great.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. Like, the lineups might not be as deep as we've seen in past years and such, but I mean, there's so much young talent, it's kind of hard to tell sometimes, hard to read this a little bit. Obviously, based on the numbers, you'd say that Coons is probably going to be the highest finishing super team. But I still think that some of these smaller teams have a little bit of an advantage. You know, if you're 2-3 cars into this thing, I think that's like the sweet spot. I think some of these teams, you know, some of these teams have rental cars to make it work, you know, to run all week and whatever. But I mean, to me, it seems like the 2-3 cars are the sweet spot. Or you look at Kevin Swindell last year with one.
And, exactly.
You know, but I mean, I think like 2-3 is the sweet spot. I think you start getting over that, it might start stretching things thin, or you've got so many different cars. I mean, granted, the one advantage you do have is you have all that track time to see what the racetrack's doing. And like I said, again, we could look like complete idiots next week. But I mean, you know, at some point you wonder how much of that maybe gets in your head a little bit and maybe sends you off the wrong direction.
Another team I really like is the Alex Bowman team with Swanson, Leary, and KTJ.
Yes, I mean, it is.
You got three very experienced drivers who are going to be in that, are probably going to make the feature or have a shot to make the feature. So I really like what that team did with just three guys who are there to do nothing but win.
Well, and Alex loves the Chili Bowl. I mean, they massage those cars all summer to get ready for Chili Bowl. I kind of like indoor racing for that. There are teams like theirs and Carter's and some, there's a bunch of them that just like massage their cars all summer, just looking forward to this one opportunity for the week in Tulsa.
So what's your super team that you're taking?
Oh man, I'm probably, it's hard to lean against the Coons deal. I mean, just because of the numbers, I think they probably have the best opportunity to put a car in victory lane. Almost went with Stevie Industries because I've kind of got Wyndham as a dark horse a little bit in this deal. But I mean, you know, as far as like the big teams, like if you got a car running almost every night, you know, it's going to be hard to beat the Coons team. But I, like I said, when it comes to the super teams, I'm kind of off that this year. I think the 2 or 3 car teams are the ones you need to keep an eye on this week.
I agree. I don't think it's going to come from necessarily one of the big teams. But I will see. I like what Matt Wood Racing has too. I really like Shane Golubic, especially inside the Tulsa Expo. I think he's a dark horse to win, in my opinion. They got Pittman and Burnell, who's also ran well there. So I like what that team has too.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, a lot of people are making a big deal of some of the big stars that aren't at the Chili Bowl right now, but there's the talent is there, and it might be actually is more even.
Right.
The most even we've seen in a while. And it's going to be tough sledding, I think, for a lot of people. You know, it'll be interesting to see what the racetrack gives us all week. And it's hard to tell. We get 70 cars every night. You know, it's amazing what they do in that building. And, you know, sometimes when the racetrack misses, I don't get as worked up as some people do about it. Because, I mean, run 70 cars a night in there. And and by the time you get to the third or fourth night, I mean, I'm amazed it's good as it is, to be honest. I mean, it's just, you know, they do an amazing job over there. So it should be entertaining to watch throughout the whole week. And I know I'm going to be tuned in the Flow Racing all week, checking that out. I'll probably get up and watch Australia Sprint Car stuff on Saturday morning because I'm a sprint car nerd like that. But let's see. But definitely the focus is on Tulsa this week.
Yeah, it's funny. I was going to make some plans on Saturday, and I was reminded from my friend that, hey, it's Chili Bowl Saturday. It's like, yeah, no plans Saturday. I'm sitting home and watching some soup.
You know what's funny is one year when someone was making a soup run, I somehow got coerced into doing some shopping on Saturday morning. I thought we were safe. We weren't going to have a big soup run. Yeah. I think it was the year maybe J-Mac made his big run through the soup. Okay. And I'm literally walking down the aisle of a Joann Fabrics because my wife was making blankets with my phone streaming the race as I'm pushing a cart on a piece of cloth down aisles, trying not to dodge stuff as I'm watching this this alphabet soup run happen. It's one of the more memorable things. You know, I have not been back to Tulsa since 2001 because unfortunately, since 2001, I've taken jobs that have a lot of responsibility this time of year, which is unfortunate. So, you know, obviously you want to follow people like Walkpedia, Matt Weaver, and stuff throughout the week. We're actually there. We're going to have full coverage here on the website as well. Serena Dahlhammer will be there shooting photos later in the week. If she feels better, I hope she's feeling a little bit better. She's been a little under the weather, but she should be there to get us some photos and stuff. But you know, one of these days when I do not have a job again that requires so much work in January, I'll probably make a return to the Expo Center.
Well, that's where I'm at too. I obviously, being a teacher, we can't take off an extended period of time. We definitely can't take off an extended period of time after a holiday break. So I'm not going anytime soon, either new job or retiring, but neither of those are happening anytime soon.
So if you're going, be safe on your way out to Tulsa. And if you're watching with us, you know, make sure to have a good time, because this is one of the best weeks of the year. So, well, this is going to wrap up this edition of the Open Wheel Spectacular. Derek, it was good having you on again this week.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll be back again next week. We're going to break down Chili Bowl. And, of course, the following week, it's Grand Annual Sprint Car Classic Week. So we're going to cover that, have a guest probably, and some more. So on behalf of Derek and myself, thank you for listening, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in. You've been listening to the Open Wheel Spectacular.